All right, well, good morning. Talk a little bit this morning about assessing risk associated with beneficial use of contaminated dredge material. I say that because that's kind of difficult to define, but we will kind of discuss that a little bit this morning. Dredging obviously is necessary to maintain water navigation. It is performed by the Corps of Engineers either directly in dredging federal navigation projects or in issuing permits for dredging. And we have an issue with, you know, sedimentation in our harbors. We have agricultural, urban, industrial runoff and their associated contaminants. Sometimes that impairs our ability to do that cost effectively. We like to do things as cost effectively as possible. Open water disposal, placement of dredge material. Sometimes we can't do that. We have confined disposal facilities we can place material. Sometimes we have issues siting those, you know, finding suitable locations for confined disposal facilities. But right now we're looking at increasing beneficial uses of dredge material. That's the key to sustainable water navigation. Beneficial use is simply taking sediment resources and using it for beneficial purposes. Shoreline, habitat restoration, building land structures, construction fill, creating topsoil. So there's a lot of different things that we can look at. We're essentially talking about sediments that are naturally occurring within the watershed system. I mean, we're not putting things in the watershed and removing it. This is stuff that's naturally occurring. We simply are trying to move it out of the navigation channel and, you know, for the most part, use it beneficially as we can, where applicable. We have thousands of demonstrated beneficial uses across the nation, everything from creating cropland on depleted land resources, creating recreational areas, green spaces, doing habitat restoration, wetland creation, island creation and restoring remnant islands, creating topsoil and doing landscaping. Lots of demonstrated uses. We dredge roughly 300 million cubic yards of dredge material yearly. NRC, National Research Council, has estimated 5-10% of that material is considered contaminated. So that leaves 90% roughly that we can potentially do something beneficial with. However, we only did about 40% in 2008. Most of that went to wetland nourishment, about 33.5% towards that. We did have some upland use, but very little, not enough. We need to improve upon that. Before we dredge, we need to determine the quality of the sediment. You know, what is it suitable for? Is it suitable to place back into the aquatic system and use beneficially for that purpose? Some cases it may not be, but we can consider using it for a soil quality, putting it back in the soil from the watershed from which it came and reuse that material. Some cases it may have some contaminant levels that restrict it from certain uses. We can use that for fill material, and it may be fill quality material. Everything else we consider impaired. We have to do something with it, either treat it before we use it beneficially, or we have to dispose of it in a confined facility and manage it. The regulatory authorities for beneficial uses, Marine Protection Research and Sanctuaries Act, also called the Ocean Dumping Act. That's pretty much for just disposal into the open ocean. The Clean Water Act addresses nearshore and inland aquatic placement, discharge of fill material. That's the Corps' main responsibility. If we're talking about upland, the Clean Water Act applies. If we have a confined facility and we have return flow of dredge material to the waters of the U.S. If we don't have return flow, we're doing unconfined placement in the upland, essentially the solid waste rules apply. We look at environmental suitability. Over the years, we've developed many test methods of bioassays, plant and animal, We've developed physical and extraction tests for water quality, various other tests to address ecological and human impacts. We have testing manuals for this. I don't go through these in great detail, but you have basically the ocean testing manual. You have the inland testing manual addressing fill, which would apply in many cases for wetland creation, that sort of thing. And then the upland testing manual basically addresses confined disposal. Clean Water Act applies here, and as well as NEPA. Here we're looking at bioavailability of contaminants in the biota, potential transfer outside the CDF. Okay. But when we're looking at upland beneficial uses, we have to consider a number of issues. It gets a little bit more complex. Now we're unconfined. We don't know what the material may be used for in many cases. We have to look at risk that may change depending on whether we're talking about upland or possibly a wetland use. If the material is going to be used for agronomic purposes, recreational, industrial, for habitat, we have different receptors that may come into play, so risk may change. And we're also subject to regulation under solid waste. So state regulations vary, the criteria may change. It's kind of hard to keep up with that in many cases, and it's hard to plan based on what we don't know. We have to address a number of contaminant pathways, soil, water, particularly groundwater, plant, and I've highlighted this because I'm going to come back to this and address this in a little bit more detail. Also animal uptake, and sometimes we have to address air emissions, volatile emissions, and dust generation. We use a tiered testing approach, where tier one, we look at existing information, beneficial uses. If the material is, say, 90 to 95% sand, depending on which state you're in, it's considered inert. No further testing is required. If we have contaminant levels that warrant review, we have to compare those to various criteria. We can pass those screening levels. We can no further evaluations generally required. But then we can go into tier three. We're actually doing exposure testing, looking at bioavailability and how that may produce some risk at a specific site and a specific use. And we can do risk assessments. This is a little bit older information, but I'm just throwing this in an example of where we've been with this. Looking at some of the state criteria for beneficial use, industrial use, and the main point here is that you can see some wide range in what states require. This is for industrial use. This is one for unrestricted use. And again, a wide range there as far as the criteria set for reuse of dredge material. There's recent publication by Jennings and Hanna, and they kind of summarized all of this, and this is actually, I don't know if you can read that. Well, maybe you can. But you're looking at just an example. These 30 elements here, the top-rated elements are regulated elements, and these vary up to seven orders of magnitude between states. And you know, we're looking at things like cadmium, for instance, which we've shown in a lot of the dredge material testing for confined disposal. Sometimes that comes up as an issue, so I pulled this one out as an example. It ranges from 0.5 to 550 milligrams per kilogram. There's a pretty wide range there. It's only three orders of magnitude compared to seven, but it's still it's an issue. How do you develop something if we're trying to develop a national manual on beneficial use testing? That's kind of difficult to do when the states dictate what you have to meet. We also have US EPA EcoSSLs apply to ecological receptors. This is a little bit more detailed, dealing with specific pathways, insectivores and herbivores, and mammalian and avian. And for cadmium, 0.36 for the insectivore, mammalian insectivore, and 0.77 for the avian insectivore. But for plant to mammal, we're looking at 73. So include that in next few slides. We actually took a lot of this, and we had some dredge materials we tested in three CDFs in Ohio. And these are the sediment concentrations in those CDFs. We're comparing to Ohio criteria, in which case we only exceeded with arsenic. Just for fun, we threw in Wisconsin's criteria, considerably lower on arsenic, and it varied between some higher, some lower compared to Ohio. And we also looked at the EcoSSLs, where we had the 0.77, 0.36 for the insectivores, and for the herbivores, 28 and 73 from the plant to mammal. Okay, now, we looked at some bioassays, took our plant bioassays, and evaluated this material, these materials, and looked at the plant, soil plant to mammal pathway. And we had tissue concentrations in the plants, and so we look at that and say, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, we take the toxicity reference values from the EcoSSLs and the risk model, and we take that information and calculated an acceptable plant concentration. So for cadmium, we get an acceptable plant concentration of 8.8 milligrams per kilogram. So now we have something to compare to. So we did that for these metals that we had data for, and we came up with an acceptable plant concentration. Anything below this would be acceptable, and we compared that to our tissue concentrations from the direct exposure, and we find that actually cadmium exceeded that for this one particular CDF. And keep in mind that the sediment concentration was 2.6, where the EcoSSL for that was 73 for that pathway. So you look at, okay, well, what's going on here? Oh, back up. Okay. This is data from several locations within the Great Lakes. We looked at sediment concentrations and exposed plants, and we find that the bioaccumulation factor for Toledo Island 18 was 3.95 soil to plant. And we had quite a few that were fairly high. The assumed plant bioaccumulation factor in the EcoSSL, I believe, was 0.5. So we had several that were quite higher with this. Bottom line here is that bioavailability is site specific. And, you know, we would like to use screening criteria for beneficial uses, however, and of course our core districts would love that because it's easy for them. They don't have to spend money on conducting bioassays. But as we see here, if we want to ensure that beneficial uses is used in a safe manner, we're essentially going to have to use bioassays until more defensible criteria are developed across states. So in summary, we are very concerned about ecological and human health risk when promoting beneficial use of dredge material. We find that, you know, state and federal guidance is often at odds, certainly between states. In many cases, we're dealing with a dredging project that's on state lines. You're dealing with Wisconsin, you're dealing with Michigan or Minnesota. So we have issues there. We need to continue to have research to develop defensible criteria that we can use and have confidence that we are not creating an issue or a risk to receptors. We need to develop more cost-effective exposure testing. And we find that, you know, contaminant bioavailability is very significantly, and, you know, most of the testing that we need to do is site-specific. That's best addressed by conducting exposure tests with bioassays and getting site-specific data. And upland beneficial uses of dredge material is still evolving. This is something we're really getting deep into now. It's become a critical issue in the Great Lakes, where they don't have options to do aquatic placement in many states, and we have to look at doing upland beneficial uses, because confined disposal facilities, we're replacing a lot of this material currently, are running out of space, and they don't have space to build new ones. And we're talking about shutting down entire harbors. So it's critical for jobs, it's critical for industries, and critical for a lot of these cities. So with that, I'll end on this slide. This is a actually where we had a successful project. A collaborator, an entrepreneur, was actually selling this material for $9 a cubic yard. It was basically dredge material mixed with leaf compost, and had a nice little catchy phrase there. But it does work, but we have to use good science to make sure that it's safe. That's it. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Richard, for a very interesting presentation. And we have time for one quick question only.
Okay. Yes.
One quick question. I noticed your first slide was Cleveland. You have Cleveland in the harbor. This is a big issue in Cleveland, as you know.
Right.
And they need the material. And so my question to you is, do you think if you adjust for bioavailability, that would allow you to meet all the requirements, if you can make that adjustment?
I think we can, and we're actually working on that right now. We have a project in Cleveland, and so we're right in the thick of it. We're hoping it does, and we can certainly look at bioavailability, and we can determine where we have restrictions and where we don't. There's always a use. It's just a matter of, you know, how far you can carry it. I mean, can you do crops with it? Maybe not. Can you make a recreational field where the exposure may be different? Possibly. So certainly we've done some industrial fill there. So that's always a possibility. But, you know, these types of tests, I think, will get us there.
Okay.